podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
That happens. Hello, good evening, and welcome to Winners and Losers with the LFC Day Trippers. I'm Gav, that's Dicko, that's P, and we have two winners, we have two losers for this week, and we have new music. As you can see at the start, we have made the debut tonight of that music because Phil's not here because he has an absolute breakdown over music, so we've thrown her in tonight. I think it's a belter. It's the third version of Winners and Losers intro, because we keep getting done for copyright. But hopefully that one stands up and we're absolutely okay. And I wouldn't mind, it's not like fucking Noel Gallagher ringing someone and going, listen, they're using me music. It's just someone, somewhere, some randomer going through our videos, which is mental. Comments are starting to fly in here. People are starting to fly in to watch. So we all know how it works. The lads have two topics each. One a winner, one a loser. 12-minute time slot on each of them. And when the 12 minutes is up, you will hear this.
We're in showbiz, baby.
Okay. We're working on new sound effects. The Harry Maguire one is the one I really want. And I might get the mashed potato from the golf as well. It's just, we just realised that before we started that that might be a good one. Pete on the sangria. Says Tom Boland, good man.
Actually, GNT.
I thought it was one of those rose fucking, what you call them, West Coast coolers or something, because it's midweek. Now, Sass Coppa is waiting in the airport, so this would be a good hour to pass. Good man. That's, of course, his man from Canada. Right, I don't know where to start. Let's start with your winner. Yeah, go on.
My winners this week, and my winners are obviously the fringe players who have secured their moves away from the clubs. I mean, for me, you know, it's obviously boring season for everybody. There's nothing to play for. Everybody, all the journals are making up stories left, right and centre, but Liverpool, as usual, only commit stuff to the press that's really happening. So the likes of Divock Origi, obviously maybe Minamino, and a couple of players who have served their purpose and may not be with us are getting their just desserts and their moves away. And to be honest with you, the reason I choose them as winners is every one of them to a T, even the young lads who are going out. It looks like Nico Williams might be going out for a big amount of money, whether it be Nottingham Forest or maybe even back to Fulham. They go out, you know, with their heads held high. They go out, you know, not saying anything bad about the club, not really having anything. No controversy, just it seems to be the whole club. It's a bit like what we said last week, Gav. You know, it's that succession planning. Everybody knows their place. Even those lads, they know what they're doing. The lads that are coming in know what they have to do, you know, to earn their place. Not in the 11 in the squad. And it just, to me, I look at other players, for example, who I contrast them to, the likes of Jesse Lingard, for example, at Manchester United. It's just literally a song and a dance and a huge controversy. Nobody said goodbye to me properly. I've been disrespected this. Then the other extreme end, the likes of Paul Pogba, who, I mean, has made a documentary about, you know, what side of the bed he's getting up, he's making a documentary about where he's going and the nothing that he was offered. It's just all trouble everywhere else. But again, even lads that aren't going to stay with Liverpool Football Club, even leaving seems to be pleasant. And I know that Dicko, one of his topics tonight, is going to talk about somebody coming back to us. It goes to show you the door is always open at Liverpool, and I think even probably more so now than even over the last couple of decades. But people come, they go, they understand their place, they always want to come back. There's no bitterness, and I just think it makes them winners. Divock Origi for me leaves an absolute winner. A lot of people debate over whether he's a legend or whether he's, you know, deserving of a statue or deserving of this or that. But for me, nobody comes, nobody stays, nobody goes without it being pleasant. It's just an all-round fantastic place to be, Liverpool, it seems, particularly lately. And I just think, you know, I want to kind of tip my hat to the lads that are leaving and just call them absolute winners. I mean, look at even Sadio Mane. 5 years ago, if Sadio Mane was leaving us, it would have been consternation. It would have been, you know, he's at the peak of his career. Let's be honest, he's 30 years of age, probably another 3 sensational years left in him. But we've looked at him, we're like, okay, he's won every single club major trophy that you could win with us. And 99.9% of the fan base is just wishing him good luck, wanting him to absolutely smash it for Bayern Munich, except if it's against us. And just excited for him. Not, you know, not just saying, ah, oh, what could have been, but understanding, you know, the bulk of the fan base understands the progression. I think people are starting to understand now what Jurgen Klopp does. That, not that we become predictable, but that he needs to mix it up a little bit and Sadio Mane needs to go. And I just, you know, Mane's a winner. Origi's a winner. Minamino's a winner. There's no gnashing of teeth at people leaving. It's just, it's the healthiest I've seen in my lifetime, Liverpool Football Club being. And I think the players and the personalities that have been brought in are a huge testament to that. Now, I know Klopp didn't bring Origi in, but certainly he kept him there for a reason. And I just think it's a real indication of where we are at the moment. Absolutely healthy. The healthiest club in world football. And it goes to show you don't just come in and add to it. Even when you leave, you add to what we're doing. For me, it's incredible. For me, it's incredible.
We done a show on Mane last night, and my feeling on it is you don't know why Mane is leaving. You just don't. You know, we don't know whether it's because he wants a new challenge. We don't know whether it's because Klopp has said enough, he wants to do something different. Or we don't know if it's because Liverpool haven't offered him enough money to stay. Or the terms on that deal that he's being offered is just not enough for Sadio Mane, and he's decided, no, they probably don't want me enough. I'll go off and I'll play for Bayern Munich. We don't know what it is. It could be any of those. We'll probably find out more when he signs for Bayern Munich, and you probably get some quotes from him. And usually, without saying anything, you can usually read the vibes of what he's talking about and how he talks about Liverpool as to was everything all right when he was leaving. I get where you're coming from, though, with players leaving and everything kind of being very civil. You know, I think that's the word for it. Very civil, speak very well of the club. And I don't know what it is. I think because we're so good at the moment, I think it's easier for players, if they leave because they can't get in the team and they might need to go somewhere else for another challenge. And I'm not talking about Mane in that one. But I think it might be easier where they go, this team is just so fucking good. You know what I mean? And it's easier to accept. Whereas if you go back 10 years ago and there's a player leaving and he's kind of surplus to requirements under Brendan Rodgers, say, less than 10 years ago, you'd probably get players going, well, I could have played in that team. Look who's there. Look who's there. I could do this. I could do that. And no one could really argue against them. Even though you might have thought the player was brutal, you go, well, they're not a great side. You know, could he have done a job? But I think the way things are now is that if you take Minamino, Minamino's come over. He's been unlucky with COVID when it kicked in and he doesn't get a chance really to mix with his teammates and it takes an awful long time. He's top scorer in both cup competitions this season, but he's looking at it going, will they go for the cups next season? Will I get into that team? Probably not. And they're just very, very fucking good. And he leave on good terms and he go and I think it is a sign of where the club are at. And not only really good people are it, but the structure is brilliant because everyone knows their role. Everyone knows what they're doing. Everyone speaks when they're meant to speak and they don't speak out of turn, you know, like other clubs do. And it's very straight down the line. And when it's very straight down the line like that, it's very hard to find variances in what people are saying because only one person's saying it. So you can't really fish for variances, if you know what I mean. But I go with you, though. If Minamino went, if Mane will go, Origi, Nico Williams has been linked with numerous clubs now at this stage. And they'll all go and they'll all speak well of Liverpool and you wish them all the best. And it is, although they're leaving the club with nothing tarnished on their reputation, which is important, you know. They go, we've seen players over the years leave the club and, you know, they do all sorts of interviews, there's all sorts of comments out of them, but Pete's right, isn't he? It's, you know, whether you agree with them going or not, it seems to me like everything is just done right.
Yeah, I mean, it's all at the end of the day, it's all down to culture, isn't it? And, you know, culture encompasses a lot of things. And I think exits are an important part sometimes. They're kind of not seen as important, but I think they are. We've seen it last season with the sort of the outpouring of thanks for Wijnaldum and Shaqiri leaving in slightly different circumstances to one another. But, you know, even with the you know, a lot of people wanting Wijnaldum to stay, when he did make that decision to leave and go to PSG, you know, there was nothing but well wishes. And I think the same would have been said for the players in that dressing room as well. I mean, there's a togetherness there from, I think, almost the moment that players enter into Liverpool Football Club to the moment that they have to step foot outside of the club. You know, you've seen it with Gordon and Nunes, you know, the signings. It's generating a lot of excitement. You see with Nunes, you know, Trent straight out there putting kind of funny tweets out there about, you know, may I assist you? You know, I think it's just an ingrained part of the culture now that Klopp and all the staff have got sort of, you know, top and bottom of the club. And it's something that we've got to be thankful for, to be honest with you. You see elsewhere, you know, acrimonious separations of players and clubs. You know, I think we'll come on to my subject in a while around Lukaku leaving, and we'll also, you know, we've also seen kind of, you know, things around potentially Sterling leaving, and I think that'll kick up a bit of a stink as well. And you feel with other clubs, obviously, Pete's touched on the way Manchester United seem to be operating at the moment. So I think even Manchester City, you can see one or two kind of characters leaving that club over the next year or two and coming out and doing interviews and actually revealing more than I would imagine Pep Guardiola would be comfortable with being revealed in public. I think there's potentially flashpoints there further down the road, but I think with us, you know, these players that, I mean, even the Mane, like the Mane exit is a bit shocking in some respects. I mean, it came about so quickly. But if you think about it, the way, and to me, the move, you know, he manufactured the move, but he did go about it in a far better way than any, you know, than a lot of players in his position probably would have gone. You know, there was none of this. It was obviously in his mind in the lead up to the end of the season. He kept the lid on it. He never went out there saying that he was looking, you know, to move and finish off his Liverpool career when we still had, you know, trophies to win around the time when we were trying to win FA Cup finals, we're trying to clinch a league, we're trying to win a Champions League. You know, I this is a big, big player who's left the club, and actually he's gone out with, you know, all the best wishes in the world from the fan base, which I think is quite a hard thing to do in this day and age, and with social media and so on and so forth. I actually think he goes out with his head held high. So whether it be Mane, Origi, others to come with the likes of Minamino, you know, I think this there's a common theme now around players once they've served the time with the club, you know, getting, you know, all the well wishes from both the management team, the players and the fan base.
You're doing well there, 19 seconds left.
I thought 15 if he wanted to come back in.
Well, I just think you're right. I think you're, and I'm glad we're agreed on it, because for me, to be honest with you, it's the one thing that transpires from this is that there's a structure of the club, there's a plan, and it's not going to change for anybody, to be honest with you.
Well done.
We're in showbiz, baby.
That was good. Really good timing. Escapado says, we are sweeping problems under the carpet. We need to either sell players on 1-year contracts or re-sign this window. What are we going to do if they all leave next summer? The thing about that is, for me, is you're going to see this an awful lot more in football. I think it's not creeping into the game. I think it's been around a little while. But I think you're going to see more and more players running down contracts, not interested in moves. And I'm not just talking about Salah on this because people think, oh, you're just saying this because of Salah. No, I think you're seeing quite a lot in football now where players are going, I'll do another year. I'm not a good team. They're not bad. But I could probably treble me signing on fee next summer. I won't have to worry about my club accepting any deal. So for the sake of a year, I can don't have to have transfer negotiations. I'm free to sign for whoever I want. They can offer me treble what the signing on fee what I would get this summer. And possibly more money than they would give me this summer. You know, the sort of way. And you know, like people are going on about this midfield thing, and I hate to go out on a tangent, but the midfield thing for me is, let me put it out there. I think we should sign a midfielder if one of our midfielders leaves. Now, that's not me sitting on the fence. You have to look at numbers when it comes to midfield. There's seven players in midfield. We can't just sign an eight for the crack. And yeah, if you sign an eight for the crack, you're probably leaving, I would say, Oxlade-Chamberlain is furthest down the list of midfield at the moment. You're leaving a fella on £6 million a year on the bench. 1 year left on his deal. He might run her out. We might get a few quid from him in the summer. If it was me, I think it would make sense to move Oxlade-Chamberlain on. And it's not because I don't like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's because I think it showed in the last while when he was fit, especially Southampton away. We're rotating heavily at Southampton away, and he doesn't get a look in, and he's fit. He ends up on the bench. I don't think he comes on. Doesn't get a look in, and I kind of understand when people say, "Oh, we need to sign a midfielder." I would like to up the quality in midfield, right? Dependency as well. How dependent the player, or how you know reliable they are, but I don't think he can do it with seven sitting there already. So yeah, if you want Ox to go, the club might say to Ox, I don't know how much you'll get, much game time you get. And he go, well, I'll stay here for a year, $120,000 a week. And then someone will give me $10 million next summer. You know, so it's hard to do. I kind of get where people are in the midfield thing. I understand if you look at the injuries that these players come across at times, the drop in form, absolutely get it. But I think you're going to have to wait and see someone leave until someone comes in, and that all ties back to players leaving the club, and you know, how do you leave, and it's very gracious when they leave and stuff like that. But you're seeing creeping in more and more now where you might get a bit of, you know, people going head to head against each other, clubs and players, because why wouldn't they stay for another year, you know, the sort of way.
You've got a factor in this season, Gav, as well, is what players are going to be taking part in a World Cup as well. And sometimes there's additional value around keeping players around who are not going to be participating in a World Cup, you know, either side of that break in the middle of the season. So there's a lot. It's a very unusual season this season.
Yeah. Look, it's just as end of the day, it's honouring a contract. It's all you can ask for. Yeah. And I know we've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but that midfield thing just keeps coming up and up and up, you know. But as I said, numbers dictates what you have, and I think I'd be amazed if Liverpool don't sign a midfielder if one of them goes. I'd be amazed, and I'd be kind of looking going, whoa, hold on a minute, what's going on here? But we don't know what's going to happen, and you might see one leave. You might, like, I've seen stuff about Keita and money for a guy in Italy, Barella, and I've seen, you know, Willock's leaving. If one of those were to leave, I think Liverpool would have to bring one in. But at the moment, Liverpool aren't going to tell you. Liverpool, you know, all this, oh, their summer's done. They're not going to come out and say we're actively looking for a centre midfielder. Why would you? It's only going to push our price up. But
we'll just sign one.
Yeah. Well, he can play three or four
positions.
Let's get on to it. Who is your winner of the week, Dicko?
My winner of the week is Jay Spearn returning to the club. Obviously, he's a huge winner. I mean, obviously, his career once he left Liverpool kind of went in one direction, and it wasn't a very good direction, really, I suppose, from the point of view of, you know, the clubs that he was playing for and so on, and what became of his career. I mean, interestingly, I was just looking here, his last match 10 years ago in 2012 was a Europa League qualifier against Hearts. I think I've blacked that kind of those scenarios out of my mind.
Did we win that like 1-0 on aggregate?
Probably, yeah.
Something mad like that.
We draw like the away leg and then win 1-0 and have something crazy like that. But then when you actually have a look at the team we put out in as what turned out to be his last game for the club, you can understand why we might have only won that 1-0 on aggregate. There is one player that we was in that side who still is at the club. Any guesses?
Jordan Henderson.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so he could restore his
rekindle a midfield partnership.
Yeah.
Do you know what? How much fun would it be if we rocked up the Fulham with Henderson spearing and fucking Kate in midfield? Just throw him out for 15 minutes just to see the reaction and take him back off. But
yeah, Klopp would be trolling people.
But yeah, Dicko, it's a good move for him.
It's a great move for him. I mean, I think we have. It kind of reminds me a bit of the kind of the boot room kind of scenario in some ways. We've obviously decided to bring back someone who has got a very good understanding and knowledge of coming through the club at a young age. Probably understands. And has walked that path of what it is to be a young starlet, then make that breakthrough, get into the first team, maybe establish yourself for a short while, and then obviously the other end of it, understanding what the pitfalls I suppose are of ultimately not making it, and then I suppose he could demonstrate that he still has had a 10-year career in football even after he didn't make it or sustain that initial kind of success with Liverpool. So, you know, like it or don't like it, he's being brought back predominantly, obviously, in a coaching capacity. He'd be a certain level of a role model, I guess, for some of the young lads coming through. And I'm sure they'll use his experience in the academy for all it's worth. The strange part of it, and I've heard a few shouts around his potential selection for under 23 matches, is that obviously it potentially removes spots for other players, for young players coming through. But I think there's always an element in the makeup and the mix of those teams that there's a kind of a senior player or two who's knocking about whether they coming back from injury or whatever it may be, someone who's out of favour.
I think the idea behind the Dicko is that when it comes to League Cup and stuff like that, right, Liverpool bring a lot of these players into the fourth team squad to get experience, and at the same time the 21s are they going back to 21s this season or next season?
23
is 20, right? So I think what happens then is that you'll get the 23s playing around the same time and they have no players. They're having to bring 18 year olds up to play against 23 year olds. So I think the idea behind this is that he would only fill in when Klopp pulls 3, 4, 5 of them out and says, right, you're going into the squad for a League Cup fourth round away game against fucking Wickham or something, you know what I mean? And he's able to step in. I can't see him turning up every week, Dicko, and go, listen, I want the game. Do you know what I mean?
No. Listen, it's anyone old enough, and none of us are really, anyone old enough to remember Sammy Lee and, you know, his in and out at the club as a person, it's just Sammy Lee all over again. Somebody who understands the club, how it's run at all levels. And someone who can, I mean, it shows that Klopp and the organisation is serious about what we're doing. I mean, listen, a huge part of our revenue comes from selling, believe it or not, bringing these players to a certain level and selling them. I mean, we're just about to sell possibly a player who hasn't even got 10 first team appearances for us for in excess of on target for 20 million quid. That's where we, and it boils a lot of people's piss, to be honest with you. You know, oh yeah, Netsbet champion. That's why we are, because we focus on their development. We send them where we need to send them. They play a certain amount of, and they get market value. So someone like Jay Spear, and you know, will be a shining light for these lads because he's had a career and he shows these lads that if you are and if you sign up to what we do as a player, you will end up being looked after. I just think it's so fun. I sound like it, and I am FSG in because these guys have just come in genuinely listening to what the club's about and seeing how they can make it lucrative. That's the genius of FSG. They've actually monetized what we do as a club naturally. And this is another stroke of genius. Okay, how can we make this lucrative for us? Bring another fellow who is a shining example to everybody that chooses Liverpool. I mean, you must remember, there's a lot of 10, 11, and 12-year-olds making decisions now with their parents. Do I sign for Manchester United? Do I sign for Manchester City? Do I sign for Newcastle? Do I sign for Liverpool? And a lot of their parents will be looking at what we do, thinking, okay, that's a club you'll be looked after. It's another stroke of genius from FSG, to be honest with you. And I just think, I sound like a religious convert, but for me, it's brilliant business, and it's just a brilliant finger on the pulse. A lot of people at the beginning of all this thought, FSG, money man, they don't care. They know this club as well as anybody, and this is just another sign of that.
I'm not getting into FSG, not tonight. I might have to do another show complete on FSG in the next couple of weeks.
There's a lot of FSG houses coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, we've been called FSG Shields today, which was amazing. by people that don't even listen or watch, they just, I don't know.
I've never listened, apparently.
Listen, it doesn't really matter. They can listen.
And we've got the exclusive interview with John.
The exclusive interviews are obviously behind the paywall that doesn't exist, which is the crack. But like I said, if you're FSG in, FSG out, or, you know, we're somewhere in the middle, if you want to come on here and have a discussion about it, you're more than welcome to. It's always open. It's an open forum, and that's how it works. But on Jay Spearing, it's a good move for him. I think he's at Tranmere last season. He's 33 years of age now.
He's from the grounds in the northwest. He's Bolton.
Yeah, Bolton, Blackpool. Yeah. He's been around there. So I think it's a good move for him. You know, he's 33. He's probably still looking enough. He's probably hasn't stopped playing football. Like, genuinely.
He's younger than James Milner, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. But I think Milner's playing at that high level. I think when you're around Tranmere, it becomes more of a slog. At 33, you know, that sort of way. And look, he's probably looked at an opportunity to get into coaching, and this one has fallen for him, and it just happens to be Liverpool Football Club, which is amazing for him. I think the biggest plus in it all for the club is, like we've just said, he's been at Blackpool, Bolton, Tranmere, he's been at Liverpool, he's played in the Premier League, I think he might have played European football as well. But when you have players there, you know, like you say, you develop them and they go out on loan and stuff like that. I think as a mentor to these players, where they go, look, you know, P, you're 20. You know, there's a loan offer there from Bolton, right? And you're going, I want to stay. And he's going, listen, they're a good club. Go there. Trust me. I know the people there. Get a year under your belt. Listen, you know, he may have done it when he was younger. He knows people that have done it when he was younger. And he can point to these players that he's played with. But at Liverpool, you know, where he says, look, do you remember this guy? He went out 2 years long. Look where he is now. So I think as a mentor to the players, I think it's huge, not only in the fact that playing football, but as a bit of a life coach amongst the squad, if that makes any sense. Now, I'm sure Liverpool have loads of them in the club, liaison officers and all that sort of thing, but to have a real kind of footballer that's played at this club and other clubs around the Northwest across, I would suggest, all the divisions, the four divisions anyway, I think it's a really good thing. And, you know, he's looking to get into this part of the game. And I think at the moment it's a good fit. And, you know, listen, anyone to take it, anyone denying Jay Spearing the chance to come back and do that, ask yourself, if you were offered it tomorrow, would you take it? Yeah. But look, I'd be telling them, which shop is cheaper for the cans and stuff like that. It wouldn't be about loan moves and stuff like that. I don't think it was him.
I think Liverpool have long had this kind of setup where if there's young players, even young players, I mean, I know lads from back in the day of sort of McManam and Fowler days where they were in the youth squads with them. They didn't quite make the grade. They kind of played lower league football, and then they brought them back as coaches, and then they've kind of carved out coaching careers for themselves and gone on elsewhere. There was one lad who I think he was doing a coaching role for the Japan national team at one stage, a guy called Stuart Gellin. And so, look, we we absolutely always will utilise lads that have come through the youth setup and the academy, and I think it's a really good use of players who've got the right kind of makeup, characteristics that they have this tendency to want a coach to bring them back and bring on the next generation, because it's a never ending conveyor belt. So I think it'll work out. So, I'm hopeful that, we mentioned James Milner. I'm hopeful that James Milner will want to take on a coaching role within the club, because I think he would be an absolutely fantastic role model and coach to have on the books. So but long may it continue. I think this is all back to us being a successful club and being able to sort of foster the next kind of generation of youth. And let's not forget, a few people have made the comments here, even if they don't make the grades, they're absolutely great money earner in the transfer market. You're getting some decent fees for players now, 20, 30, 40 million, up to that kind of level for academy players.
We're in showbiz, baby.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I think it's an interesting one. And if it was someone you didn't know, you'd kind of go, they brought someone in. But with it being Jay Spearing, do you think we'd watch it a bit more and see where it progresses to? I think we might.
But there'd be no surprises there. He'd be running out with the kids when he's running out. That's simple. Yeah. And he'll be holding hands. That's his job, and his job is to anchor, to show people the path. And listen, whether they go right or they go left, he's been right and he's been left. He's played with big players. He's also played, as you said, Gav, earlier on, he's played with small players at small clubs. So he knows all sides of the Venn diagram. He knows what can happen. I just think it's astute, as you say. It's I don't know whose idea it was, no idea. But whoever's it was, they've seen that it's someone that will cover all bases for all eventualities for all of the kids that come through. It's smart. And as you say, Liverpool are known as a club that looks after their own. Whereas I'm seeing an awful lot of clubs out there, particularly the last couple of years, shiting all over their own. To be honest, there's Jesse Lingard, who I mentioned earlier on, at Manchester United since he was 9 years of age. Nobody even said goodbye to him. The difference.
P, your loser of the week.
My loser, and it's a good segue into it, Gav, as usual with you, is players.
I have to read this. Gav is like a little kid with a fair cushion with that sound boy. What a shout from Luke Jackson. Sorry. I'll start the clock for you now. Go on.
No, my loser of the week is rival clubs who, a bit like in contrast to Liverpool, which all losers are at the moment, rival clubs who are trying to renew or trying to get rid of, but more or less trying to renew with players who, have either been fringe or who quite clearly don't want to be at their club. It's bizarre. I mean, I don't know if Liverpool, the hierarchy at Liverpool, must be looking at other clubs thinking, well, Shoney is the way, and I mean, only Port Owl Everton have decided, well, we might look at the Portuguese transfer market, and it's obvious because Liverpool have had a couple of roaring successes there. And as they say, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and Everton will always slag us off, but then they'll try and do the cheap version of what we do very, very well. Where do we start? Because it's happening all over the clubs. Because I suppose we could start with Pogba and the fact that he has absolutely produced nothing other than 12 or 13 haircuts and 3 or 4 contract refusals. And yet they have tried right up to the end to get him to renew. And now he's filmed a documentary basically calling a 350, whatever he was offered. As Phil would say, don't mention numbers, but whatever he was offered, a nothing offer. We see it all, time and time again. It's almost like these clubs are reading the manual upside down to what Liverpool is doing. And they're...
But you include in this, you include clubs that are giving deals to players that you feel they shouldn't be, and they just...
Panicking. They're panicking. I mean, I look at the situation, the best an example of the situation for me is the situation with Rudiger at Chelsea. I mean, this player is toxic. He's a toxic guy. He reminds me of a defensive version of Nicolas Anelka. You know, he will play and turn up when he feels like playing and turn up. And he was anonymous until the last year of his contract. And all of a sudden, he was doing his utmost to convince the world that he was Virgil van Dijk Mark II. All of a sudden, this character and throwing himself into tackles. And he was obviously throwing shapes. Even today, you can see his statement today was, oh, Barcelona were also interested, but when I told my brother. And that's what reminded me of Anelka. I told my brother, once Real were interested, I'm not interested in anything else. That's shapes, throwing shapes, you know, trying to make the right noises. For me, he's trouble. I mean, when somebody mentioned months ago that, oh, maybe Liverpool were interested, there's no way. This is a toxic player. So many toxic players. Listen, as Dicko said earlier on, it's a kind of sign of the times. I think players, clubs panic because they think, oh, maybe he'll come good somewhere else and, you know, he'll run down his contract. We'll look ridiculous when we let him go and then he'll pull up trees. I mean, the Werner's another example for me. I don't think Chelsea know what to do with Timo Werner. I mean, it's just an absolute flop. You know, some players are just toxic, Gav. And what I'm seeing is with Liverpool, I'm sure we've had our fair share of toxic characters. Mohamed Salah is one of the greatest players who's ever played for us. But he's got a toxic agent. And listen, I think Liverpool are going to position themselves like they seem to be positioning themselves, that we will get the absolute utmost out of him. And he'll either sign the deal or he won't, but we'll be ready contingency-wise. But it won't be down to our relationship with the player. It'll be down to our toxic relationship with the agent. And that will continue onto his next, you know, unless he changes agents. The point I'm trying to make is I think this week's losers, and certainly the summer's losers, are all of those clubs that are negotiating with players that you can see that they don't want to negotiate. It's just fear negotiation. It's almost like we better do something or somebody else will, kind of thing. It's just not the way we're run.
A bit of that came out in the Eddie and Nketiah deal with Arsenal.
Because yeah, I remember
going back to January and people were like, oh, when Nketiah isn't good enough, he'll leave the club. I've read Arsenal fans saying, like, now we haven't seen a hell of a lot of him. He's been all right when I've watched him. But Arsenal fans were like, oh, he's out of contract in the summer. He's not good enough for Arsenal. Get rid. I think he was heavily linked with Leeds in January. And Arsenal fans, for the majority that I read, were like, you know, we can replace, we can do better and stuff like that. And then he signed the deal. Arsenal have given him another deal when he's let it go right down to the last couple of weeks. And it's all of a sudden, oh, he's the number 14. And 14, of course, is a massive number at Arsenal. A bit like Henry. 7 or 10 will be. It's a Thierry Henry's number, yeah. And you've seen Aubameyang and you've seen Walcott are very young taking that number. And I don't know if it's a bit of panic from Arsenal with Eddie and Kevin.
No, Daff, listen, you've hit the nail on it. Arsenal Football Club are a panic club. And it's funny, you know, a lot of people laughed at Arsenal Fan TV, but I think they're a huge part of what has made that club a panic club. They actually look at that and they think, oh my God, they panic. They do things through sheer panic. I mean, nobody noticed last week, but I'm not a big Arsenal fan, but Bernd Leno, who they spent 20 odd million pounds on and who was supposed to be, you know, the greatest goalkeeper on earth, he's going out the back door, I think, for nothing. Like, Arsenal panic. They just panic. It's not one of those clubs where you go in. I mean, Granit Xhaka is the best example I could give you there. Granit Xhaka at a decent football club, a decently run football club, after his 7th or 8th red card as captain, would have been shown the door. Arsene Wenger would have shown that guy the door. He would have just went, you haven't got the temperament for the Premier League. You've got a bit of ability. Even that's in question. But you certainly haven't got the temperament to lead, and you haven't got the temperament for me. And I can't play 15% of the season with 10 men. You need to go.
Mm.
They offered him then a new contract.
Yeah, I mean, he was linked with Rome, I think. Dicko, you know, it's early days. Like, I don't think the transfer window officially opens till the 4th of July, you know. But, you know, like, I don't know if Dan Nketiah thing is just a bit mad for me. I'm solely going on what I read in January and Arsenal's fan reaction to them. And he could possibly go to Leeds and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, it's a big, huge thing made when he signs a deal. Some people are saying 100 grand a week plus, by the way. But they go, are we going to see more of this? Are we going to see more of a little bit of panic as the summer goes on? Because, you know, I'll say it again, the transfer window is not open yet, right? But all of, like, few United fans I'm speaking to are going, what the fuck is going on? Like, if he has a budget, like, they're recording, or is he the director of football? I don't know what your man Arnold is at United. But they're recording him under a table in a beer garden. Frankie de Jong doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He's been linked with them for weeks. He's meant to have a budget. Will you see some panic? You know, Timber, is it Timber? Oh, Foyax has said, no, I'm not going to United.
Yeah, Louis van Gaal told him, no, you're not going. You won't play for me.
But Dicko, is it, will you see more of this panic come along where they just go, ah, look, just give him a deal. We can't do this, that, and the other, just give him that deal. Because I think you might.
Yeah, naturally. I mean, specifically on the Nketiah thing, I mean, he was literally kind of a League Cup, FA Cup kind of player for them at the turn of the year. You get into the new year, obviously, Aubameyang goes out the door. Lacazette's form wasn't great. Obviously, then there's kind of talk about him looking for a move away from the club, and then they kind of turn to Nketiah, and he kind of, as strikers tend to, he catches a bit of a streak and he scores a few goals, and you're probably talking about a 10 to 12 game sample size that you then offer a huge contract off the back
of. The transfer window is open. I thought it was July the 4th. Sorry, go on.
That's when it becomes official, I think, essentially. Anything that, you know, gets done and whatnot, I think there's official dates and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, he gets that big contract off such a short stretch of games. And by the way, a stretch of games that results in them failing to secure the Champions League spot that they absolutely had sewn up at one stage. And he's on the pitch when they need goals from players, and he wasn't there to stick the ball in the back of the net when they really needed them the most, sort of thing. So, I mean, just in general, I mean, this is kind of, you know, we're not too far removed from days when we did things in panic mode. Mm-hmm. You know, we can sit now from a position of strength. Most of our
biggest panic was record signing for about 10 years, wasn't it?
Yeah. This,
you know,
we're sitting from a position now where we can look at others and we can kind of cast these aspersions that people are panicking, and rightly so, because we've been in it plenty of times down the years. You know, players getting contract extensions that probably didn't merit it, but then again, what was the alternative going to be? Who are you going to bring in to replace them? What were you going to have to pay? Would they come to the club? Right now, we're sitting in a position where, generally speaking, you know, players are coming to us because they want to play for Liverpool. They want to challenge. They want to try and win trophies. They you know, any player from outside of England, if they're kind of ultimate goal is to win the Champions League, then, you know, you go into a club that's almost, well, first of all, it's guaranteed to be in it every season now. And secondly, we're perennial semi-finalists, quarter-finalists, finalists, whatever. You know, we're there or thereabouts every season. So, yeah, I mean, other clubs aren't able to negotiate from the same platform that we're able to try and do deals now. Whether it be with our existing players and not having to break the wage structure to keep players, you know, we're not having to do David De Gea type of madness to keep a player that were, you know, I mean, United obviously got completely hung out to dry on that deal. You know, he was completely in command of that negotiation, you know, at a time when you know, they obviously feared that going back into a period when not having a goalkeeper, you know, was a disaster for them, sort of thing. So, look, players, at the end of the day, this, it's all a business, and players will sense when clubs, when they've got the upper hand against the club, and they'll absolutely use that to their full advantage. And if you've got a ruthless agent by your side, then you'll only see players double down on that advantage as well. So, Look, we've got to be thankful for where we're at, and I get great pleasure from seeing other clubs doing what appears to be bad business, and well, we'll come on to one particular bad piece of business in a second.
It's incredible. It's funny. One sec.
We're in showbiz, baby.
Dicko absolutely nailing the timing here tonight. By the way, big shout out to him. Sounded like fucking Larry Gogan there, didn't he? But I suppose loads of people in the chat there are mentioning, you know, Sterling being linked with Chelsea. Arsenal's name's in the mix. City have apparently, and this gone back a couple of weeks ago, I read it, so it could be just complete bollocks, but they were looking at Saka off Arsenal, you know, and I suppose we will have to wait till the end of the window to see if everything comes out in the wash, but you're right in what you're saying, Dicko. When players have an upper hand, you know, clubs nearly, and like Pete said as well, they go, he could actually really be good. If he went there, he could be really good. Now, we've let him run down to the last 2 months of his contract, but if he went there, he actually might be good. And, you know what, give him the deal. And if it doesn't work, we'll try sell him in a year's time. You know, sort of way. But players are in that much, players can be in that much control where they say, well, you know, if you sign a new deal and you try sell me in 12 months, I get X amount of it. You know, the sort of way. Like, they can write anything they want into contracts. And then you could throw it at Salah as well, because Salah is... The only thing I would say on the Salah thing is that Liverpool have made it clear over the last probably 2 months ago, maybe a little bit less, that the deal's on the table. The deal is there. It's not like we're not offering them a deal. So that's a little bit different to where other players stand, because you don't really hear anything about it. But as I said, when the Salah thing comes out in the wash, and if numbers come out on the table, then you will be able to make an informed decision on who done what and right and wrong, and depends where you stand on it. Anyway, probably going into it. Who have we got left?
Just me.
What have you got? Loser of the week.
Yeah.
Go on then.
Yeah. Well, mine was the £100 million men. This doesn't include Darwin Nunes, by the way.
That's because he wasn't 100 million. If it was the 64 million man, I'd have let you include him.
Still nonsense, isn't it? I was still laughing at the tweets coming over the last week.
It's desperation. I love it.
The asterisk was amazing. It was a beautiful week of asterisks.
But yeah, £100 million. I mean, I actually had two players in mind. We'll probably focus more on Lukaku, but I mean, just I'll start off by giving a mention to Jack Grealish, because, you know, he's also a £100 million player who squarely sits in the losers column for me at the moment. I mean, his form just kept going sort of down and down and down towards the back end of the season, was barely getting any minutes for Manchester City. Obviously, he comes on in that game against, who was it against, where he almost scored. I can't even remember.
Real Madrid
Almost scores, would have probably clinched, obviously, the final place for them. Gets cleared off the line when it was easier to score than not score. And then ultimately they get dumped out of that semi-final. It almost went to a new level for me when I seen, apparently he was out, wasn't he, wasn't satisfied with his sort of underwhelming season with Man City, then starts sort of piping up that he's, you know, he deserves more minutes playing for England, and Julie is selected for them. And he was absolutely atrocious. You know, he I think he got the full 90 minutes, didn't even get the hook. And, you know, he was part of that calamitous defeat for England, and he just looked completely clueless and devoid of ideas. I mean, he's to me, he's just turned into a bit of a one-trick pony now, you know what I mean? He beats a few men and there's no final ball from him. It's almost headless chicken stuff. And obviously he draws the occasional foul and whatnot, but even gets himself booked in that game. He's just, I mean, you know, he's another one of these who's just been, it's kind of right place, right time, capitalized on a scenario where his stock was high. City needs to go out there and kind of make the annual statement buy. And, you know, he comes in despite all of what we see in his past in terms of some serious kind of character flaws and issues with some of the stuff that's gone on in his personal life. But look, they make the big investment. I don't see, you know, if you compare that to Liverpool now, irrespective of what the amount was, I don't think you see us making a signing like that. I don't think you see us signing a player like that with so many red flags about the character. I really don't. That's not what we're about. We're not about trying to, you know, rehabilitate people, reform people. You come in with the right character from day one. And I think it's his attitude that's ultimately got him in this position. And I think he's got a big hole to dig himself out of. That's one side. The Lukaku thing is just so bizarre, isn't it? It's so bizarre. 100 million, re-sign him for a club that he'd played for previously. So he knows the setup there. He knows what he's walking into. It's not like, you know, you're walking into a club that you've never really had any dealings with. And within a matter of, you know, even when Chelsea were doing well enough, but he kind of points the spotlight on himself at a fairly early stage in the season and comes out and sort of lets it slip that he's essentially regretting the fact that he's moved away from Inter Milan. And he almost sets the stall out from that moment onwards. Obviously, as those weeks progress, you know, Tuchel decides to give him another chance and try and reintegrate him back into the squad, try and actually make good on that investment. But he just never catches fire at all. And then they're obviously into the second half of the season and they're still scrambling around to try and find, you know, whether it be Werner, whether it be Havertz, you know, scrambling around for the main man in terms of scoring the goals for them, which they never really seem to get on top of, and obviously a lot of their goals kind of come from midfield and even from defenders through the course of the season. So Lukaku, I just you know, the mind blows really that you can make such a bad investment. But the one thing, the commonality between the two of them for me, and again, this is why I don't see Liverpool ever putting themselves in this position, is they can afford to do it. Now, Chelsea might be a slightly different situation now, but certainly when they went out and they splashed that cash, and obviously City, self-explanatory, they go out and they throw this money around, and if it doesn't work, do you know what? We'll throw another 100 million at it and the next one might work.
I think it's interesting. I'm glad you brought these two up. Grealish, I agree with you. The stock was high. City wanted to make a statement. And let's be honest. And if you're honest, I think most fans in the Premier League looking at Jack Grealish on his former Aston Villa and the type of player he was would have been interested Jack Grealish coming to their club. Liverpool, Man United, Man City, Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea. I think they all would have liked him, right? I don't think he's been very good for Man City. And I don't think the fact that Pep's a bit mental helps him.
No.
You know, at Villa, he is that fella that plays kind of off the left-hand side. Works hard enough for Villa, but doesn't have mad, mad responsibilities. And as much as City don't play nice football, they play very mechanical football, very effective football. That's kind of pretty on the eye because they have a lot of the ball, right? And it just didn't suit him. But it's interesting that the talk is around Mahrez leaving, Sterling leaving, Jesus leaving, Grealish, not a word. And you said there they can afford to do it. If they can afford to buy them, they can afford to get rid of them. And he seems to be the one that's no one's mentioning his name. Now, it could be a face-saving kind of exercise where we can't let him go for after 100 million a year later. But I think Pep is the sort of fella that would. You just go, I'm doing it. And because I'm mental. And
is he though, Gav?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, I think he is. I think, like, Pep Guardiola signs Ferran Torres. And a couple of months later, sells him to Barcelona.
Not as much as a big splash.
Forget the money. It's the whole wasn't working. Good luck. You know, player kind of not happy. Good luck. You know, they make money. But the thing is with him, I can see him actually becoming a really important player at Man City next season. Because if the rumours are true around Bernardo Silva, Jesus, Mahrez, Sterling, right? Even if 50% of them leave the club, Grealish's stock goes up at Manchester City, regardless. Because I know they might bring one or two in, you know, that's what they do. But it's interesting. But the Lukaku one, and Sleeping Dragon says Lukaku put into place one of the greatest pieces of self-sabotage ever. I think he does Thomas Tuchel a massive favour in what he does. And hear me out, right? And this will run over the 12 minutes. But he gets to say, so just pre-warning, right? I'll still play the Dunphy thing because we all like playing it. But the thing is, right, Tuchel signs him at, what is it? Is it 115 million euros they pay for him?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous money, right? He signs him. And then when he decides that he likes Inter more and he's doing this and he's doing that, he has to do public apologies and all that. And Tuchel tries to bring him back in, right? Like you said, you're bang on. And he can't hit a barn door.
Yeah. Right?
And I think Tuchel realises that the romanticism around bringing Romelu Lukaku back to Chelsea had to have got to Thomas Tuchel, and he went with it. But what has Lukaku done? He gave him a get out of jail free card by going, we can actually get rid of this fella and no one will give out and no one will hold her against Thomas Tuchel simply because of what Romelu Lukaku done, right? Romelu Lukaku, I don't think he's any good. I don't think he's any good.
Technically, he's not great.
I don't think he's good.
You know,
what's he good at?
Flat race player. He's one of those flat race players.
Oh, flat track bully.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't flat track bully anyone this season.
Yeah, well,
and there's plenty of flat track and bullying to be done in the Premier League this season.
Yeah. Technically, he's not there. I mean, a lot of people argue the fact that Morata was a better player. And for me, don't get me wrong, Lukaku's an athlete, but when it comes to thinking, positioning, it's just not there. You know, he'll get goals in certain circumstances. You know, on the break, when you're running into space, for example, when you don't have possession. But when you have possession and teams are sitting with two banks of four and sitting midfielders, forget about Lukaku. Forget it. When he's running into space in a poor side, that's ironically when he scored all those goals for West Brom and when he scored goals for Everton because Everton were so poor. That's who he is. And to be honest with you, the Lukaku sign, I think you're right, Gab. The Lukaku signing surprised me because I thought Tuchel would have looked at Havertz and went, this is the Havertz for me is Teddy Sheringham reborn. He's a thinking man centre forward. He won't score 20 goals, but he will create 40 in the right circumstances. A very smart player. I was disappointed when we didn't sign him because I thought Salah, Mane, Havertz.
But if Thomas Tuchel's going to Inter Milan, look for a player, he should have been looking at Lautaro Martinez to play alongside.
Yeah, smart player.
To be up front instead of Romelu Lukaku. Havertz and Lautaro Martinez makes way more sense to me than.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Than
you're
him right. And Lukaku.
And I think the other thing that you've hit on the, well, both of you have, Jack Grealish for me, I mean, if City are thinking about dumping a lot of technically brilliant players. Like Bernardo Silva, I don't like him, but he's technically brilliant. And building a team around Silva, what do you want to be Aston Villa? You know, I mean, I don't get that. I mean, Jack Grealish, for me, it's another sign of why Pep, people think that Pep Guardiola is a fantastic.
We're in showbiz, baby.
Sorry, I have to play it, people. Keep going.
No, but they think that he's a fantastic coach. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, the people, and then I've heard the other excuse that, oh, he's a fantastic coach because he gets the best out of great players and all of this. For me, I was waiting for Pep to show me and show others why, by bringing, because I had an argument with Jamie Holm about a year and a half ago. You remember this, Gav, where I was like, I don't see anything in Grealish other than he's the only player that wants the ball in a bad side. John McGinn, for me, is the best player at Aston Villa, was the best player, even when Grealish was there. For me, he gives you everything. John McGinn, and it's funny, Alex Ferguson was one of those, everyone should sign John McGinn. I still maintain that. But for me, it was like, no. Jamie was like, no. Grealish this, Grealish that. Grealish is a haircut and a few nice touches in nothing games. He's a player of no consequence. But I thought Pep Guardiola, the great master coach, was going to come in and going to show us how he could make Jack Grealish into the new David Silva. Because that, for me, would have been my thinking on it, would have been the plan. But he has failed to do that. And, you know, I didn't see why he was bringing him in when he had Bernardo Silva, especially when his Phil Foden. Phil Foden is the best English player, young English player.
Yeah, but if Grealish improved his knack of standing at the back post, you know, 3-4 yards out from the line, he would have scored way more goals.
Listen, and Gav,
made a more impact. This is what I'm saying. Like, for me, we're talking about it during the week, and I have the feeling that Pep's probably saying to himself, look, if you keep trying the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, you're a bit mad, right? And I think that's where you've probably got to, where you look at the players that are there. I mean, you go through them, they're all there 5, 6, 7 years, some of them, right? Mm. And he's probably looking now going, I'm going to change it. Right, and while I'm changing the personnel, I'm going to change the style. Like, he can definitely go out and find two players that can play as inverted wingers, and literally just look to play in an overlapping fullback to square across the box. He can definitely do that, right? But I think he might go something different. And I think the fact that Grealish's name is not in the headlines as linked away, or, you know, doubts over this or doubts over that, I think you will see him become more.
No, he's going important. To try and build a side around him, Gav. But I honestly, I don't see why. For me, I would be more inclined to sit down with Bernardo Silva and tell him, I'm going to build a side around him.
Yeah, but Bernardo Silva doesn't like Pep Guardiola.
Obviously.
You know, and this all stems from the fact that was it Messi they were trying to sign, and they were offering fucking 2 and 3 players to Barcelona at the time, and Bernardo Silva was one of them. And Jesus, I think, was there as well.
But that's the part where you're right, Gav. That's the part where Pep Guardiola thinks you can treat people, and this is he's very Catalan, thinks you can treat people whatever way you want, and then they should be just happy that they haven't been sold, they haven't been given away, and then we go on. These players, and there's a difference between Pep and Klopp for me. I mean, a lot of people think that Pep, the difference is, Pep Guardiola could never have done what Jurgen Klopp had done at Mainz, had done at Dortmund, just because he doesn't understand that level of guy. He doesn't understand how to take somebody from level A to level C beyond their capability. Doesn't understand that. He just knows elite players. It's a bit like the biggest expose of who Pep Guardiola, believe it or not, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic's his book, because he just basically tells you who he is. Read the book, and he just said, oh, the philosopher. Everything is high-level philosophy. If you do this, of course, if you take the best players from the best academies all over the world, Benfica, from the best clubs in South America, the best clubs in Italy, they're going to understand whatever philosophy you put in front of them. But you take a couple of, say, 6 journeymen in Mainz and 6 young players, put them together, or 5 young players, put them together, and get a tune out of them. That's brilliant coaching. And that's the difference, I think. Even Pep knows it. Listen, I wouldn't go as far as to call him a fraud. He did a great job at Barcelona B. But again, the way Barcelona B was run is you take the best kids from all over Spain, all over Africa, and some parts of Europe, and you put them into your academy, and you get to be in the B team when you're the best of the best of the best of them. So if I'm being honest with you, it is a little bit of a fraud. Send him to somewhere like Mainz. Send him somewhere even like Dortmund.
But you're not going to get that, Pete. You're never going to get it. Yeah, unless he has a complete...
Then you're not a great coach, Gav.
That argument's probably for another day, but you're never going to get that unless he has a complete another like change of heart or brain transplant. Pep Guardiola is never going to walk into a team in England, Germany, France, Holland, Spain, anywhere. And no, say, who came fifth in the league this season?
You know, Gav, there are guys that can. Graham Potter,
He just won't.
He's the best coach in the English game after Jurgen Klopp. Graham Potter. But do you know why? This is a guy who can. This is a guy who does the work, can break it down. And it's funny that managers are after his players because they've been coached probably... I don't want to say, I don't want to use terms like fraud, but I look at Graham Potter and I don't understand the English FA. Gareth Southgate is just a blazer.
Yeah, but Graham Potter would be absolutely mental to go anywhere near the England job.
Yeah. I think just back on Pep, I think, look, is we know his MO now, don't we? He basically is only going to be prepared for the foreseeable future to work with the elite of the elite clubs. He's wanting to go in and be able to handpick, you know, the finished article, shall we say. You know, that's what he believed he was bringing in with Jack Grealish. You know, he'd worked, you know, he'd done the groundwork, you know.
Dicko, would it be fair to hold off, you know, your a ruling or a feeling on Jack Grealish until you've probably seen him in a City team where you felt that it was being probably built more around him rather than him just being on the periphery, kind of hanging out on the left wing most weeks?
I mean, I personally, I've made my mind up already, but you think
he's great?
you can grant him a second season. Like, I think the reason why you don't see him going or linked with any move anywhere else, because I don't think there's really anyone out there who would potentially be a suitor for him at this moment in time. You know, the jury.
But okay, so they go, how many would take him if, let's say, City turned around tomorrow and said, if you cover Jack Grealish's wages and 10 million loan fee, how many teams do you think in the Premier League it would look at?
Maybe United. Is that desperate for that?
I think you're into that desperate batch of clubs again. I think you might get four or five. You might get Spurs. I think they'd be teams who are trying to secure themselves a Champions League spot, essentially. You know, you might get, say, West Ham, Spurs, Arsenal.
Manchester United.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think we'd be interested whatsoever, you know, in a play with that profile, to be honest with you. But no, there'd be potentially four or five suitors out there. Probably Villa would take him back just from a kind of
nostalgic.
Yeah. To get the
Newcastle
fans
being mentioned there.
Newcastle, to me, that's a potential destination for him once City have kind of run the course with him, maybe after another couple of seasons. That you know, if you think about the trajectory Newcastle are likely to be on over the next couple of seasons, that's the type of splash signing that would kind of make a bit of a statement to their fans, I think. You know what I mean? Like, we're all waiting for that.
Well, do you know what, Diggo? In effect, for me, Jack Grealish is an Everton sign, hasn't worked at a big club, is more interested in himself as an individual, is more interested in how he's perceived. For me, it's more suitable for Everton, for him to go and flop at Everton.
I think he'd be an Everton sign, and if it was the Everton that we all kind of knew and loved from a few years ago, which were just spending money like it was going out of fashion, winning every transfer window possible, and ultimately failing time and time again at the players that they were bringing in. You know, just but quickly back on, you know, now we're talking about Everton. I mean, you're saying about what Pep would and wouldn't sort of potentially take on as a management role. I mean, just look at what Carlo Ancelotti's been prepared to do down the years. You know, he was prepared to take on a challenge at Everton. He was prepared to take on Napoli and try and make them into a perennial force in the Champions League, which he kind of did for a few seasons there. You know, Pep's just going to continue. You know, once this project at Man City's run its course, you know, he won't head anywhere other than a club that's going to guarantee him all of the spending power possible. And don't be surprised if Pep Guardiola ends up in Newcastle in 4 years' time.
And that's the thing. Somebody made the point in the comments earlier on, oh, it's a stupid argument. I don't know who it was. You know, why would you go to Mainz when Bayern? No one's asked him to do it now. But I'm telling you, he wasn't interested as a young coach at all. He was only interested in going. Pep doesn't understand. It's a bit like Ruud Gullit. For me, Guardiola has followed the path that Ruud Gullit should have done. Ruud Gullit had no business going to manage the likes of Chelsea at the time and the likes of Newcastle. Ruud Gullit was an elite player, my favourite player of all time after John Barnes. But he had no business going in somewhere like Chelsea at the time and Newcastle. Because Ruud Gullit looks at people like Terry Phelan, for example, who we had at Chelsea. And he doesn't understand those players. And he doesn't understand how to relate to them. And he doesn't understand how to improve them. I think Pep Guardiola is exactly the same. He has always been around elite players. Even when he was a ball boy at Barcelona, he was around Stoichkov, people like that. He doesn't understand how to sit down with somebody who may be a bit of a journeyman and say, I'm going to get the best out of you. Just not his skill set. So when people, and listen, I'm not blaming him for that. I'm just saying when people say he's the best coach in the world, in order to be the best coach in the world, you have to be like that. You have to be, for me, bit of Brian Clough in you, you know, where you can take a Larry Lloyd at the end of his career, you know, a bit of a Graham Potter in, where you can take some unknown Swedish kid at the beginning of his career and make stars out of both of them. Brian Clough took people like McGovern and who was the winger he had that Martin O'Neill had as his number two. Nobody else was interested in having these. No. Even before, Martin O'Neill had him as his own. Somebody will say it in the comment. But he took these players when nobody else was interested in them and made them European Cup winners twice. Pep Guardiola cannot do that, will not do that. So in order to qualify as being the best coach in the world, you have to do things like that. I'm sorry, but you have to do things like that.
Well, look, it's always something that pops up on this
John Robertson.
it's always something that pops up on this channel. I'm sure it pops up on other channels when you get down to Pep Guardiola and different things. But like, I always say it is what it is, you know, and that's where he is. And I kind of do get the argument when people say, well, look, he just Barcelona B into Barcelona. And people make the argument, well, Barcelona went into the best of shape when he came in, but he knew what he was going to get at Barcelona. Bayern Munich, on to Man City. I don't see him going anywhere really other than probably Paris Saint-Germain to finish it all off and then head off over to America for another load of money and retire nicely over there.
And it's fine, but don't call yourself or don't have, you know, don't people shouldn't mention him in the same breath as the great coaches. He has a certain thing, and Laszlo Panaflex keeps talking about it. But listen, Laszlo, before he was offered the Barca job, there would have been small clubs in Italy. For example, he played for a club where he failed a drug test as a player. And they wanted him to manage them. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want to manage Espanyol. He didn't want to manage anybody else. He wanted to wait for an elite club. So don't talk to me about stuff I already know, Laszlo. He was offered big other jobs and didn't want to take them. But braver managers, like Clough in the past, like Jurgen Klopp, took what they were offered and proved themselves. Pep Guardiola is, as Zlatan put it, the great philosopher. It's all bullshit.
Well, look, we've ran over time, but I've really enjoyed it. So I'm not going to apologise. Me, Dicko and P have had a lovely time.
Absolutely.
Dicko just stuck a tenner there on his Paddy Power app on Grealish to be player of the year next season.
You can put a World Cup player of the tournament.
Player of the tournament, Qatar 2022. Jack Grealish. But look,
me and my predictions. I'll give you some early predictions.
Oh no!
Seven
I don't
wins.
Win no, no. I don't want any predictions from you whatsoever on Liverpool. None, because you are the biggest Jonah in the world ever. You know what I mean? If Dicko predicted it was going to be bright when you wake up in the morning, it'd be fucking dark, right? So, look. It's been a really good show. Tomorrow night we have got the transfer show. No transfer knowledge, it's called. Wednesday we have, I'm recording an In My Life with a viewer and subscriber. That's going to be recorded and it'll go out probably Thursday morning. And Wednesday night we're doing a draft. I don't know what it's on yet. And I don't know who's on it. But we're doing a draft on Wednesday night for a bit of crack midweek. Have a bit of crack. And we go from there. Thursday is the viewer's voice, which we will have out live on Thursday. Friday is Sports Unplugged, and then we'll be back to things on Sunday. Failicon is our charity partner. Link is in the description. We're waiting on a couple of donations to come in that will bring us over 8,000 of the 10,000 euros, which will be great. So if they come in and we're down to our last 2 grand, we're going to bombard you. But the link is in the description to read about them. The second link in the description is also there to donate. If you can donate, great. If you can't, send it to friends, family, colleagues, wherever it might be, even people you don't like, and just ask them to donate. It's a brilliant, brilliant charity. And if we're 2 grand away from our target, I think we should absolutely go hell for leather to try and get there. Thanks a million to P. Thanks a million to Dicko. I've been Gav. That's been Winners and Losers. Thanks a million to everyone in the chat. You can like if you want. We don't ask anymore. You can subscribe if you want. We don't ask anymore either. So all the best. Over now. Sports Social Podcast Network.